It took a little while to fire into life, but part two of Match Day 6 absolutely delivered with bags of goals and drama all over Europe tonight. The Battle of the Entertainers in Dortmund didn't disappoint, with Barcelona running out 3-2 winners there, all five goals coming in the second half. Elsewhere, there were crucial wins for Juventus, Milan, Arsenal and Feyenoord, and Stuttgart hit five against Young Boys. Stay with us as we dissect all of the night's action right here on Match Day Live. Hello, I'm Ben Haynes and I'm joined by European football expert Kevin Hatchard and commentator Richard Connolly as we look back on another enthralling night of Champions League football. Kevin, we were treated to a wonderful game in Turin.
Sensational game. Great clash of styles, and Juventus executed the game plan perfectly. But every time we looked up, there were goals elsewhere. It was a great night of action.
For Juventus, after going three matches in the UEFA Champions League without a victory, domestic draws as well, to come out on top tonight is a huge flip today, and the way they did it against one of the world's great sides, yes, in poor form, but still, it'll be of enormous encouragement for them as they go forward domestically and in this competition.
Let's just quickly get you up to speed on all of tonight's scores. In the early games, Lille won 3-2 against Sturm Graz, and Atletico beat Slovan Bratislava by 3-1. As we just heard, Juventus beat Man City 2-0 in Turin. Arsenal won 3-0 against Monaco. Barcelona got a great win on the road away against Dortmund. They won 3-2. It was goalless between Benfica and Bologna. Milan got a late winner against Savona Svezda to win 2-1. Feyenoord won 4-2 against Sparta Praha. And Stuttgart beat Young Boys by 5-1. And a reminder, for a full recap of Tuesday night's action, download our Matchday Live Review podcast from your favourite provider. Let's begin then with our featured commentary match in Turin. Richard Connolly describes the action.
Savona goes one further back to Locatelli, who will spin the ball in, and there's Gatti with an acrobatic effort, and he holds his head in his hands. Edison had to save it. The cross comes back in, and there's the header, and Edison, has he kept it out? Oh, no, he hasn't. It's a goal. Vlahovic has scored for Juventus. Juventus 1, Manchester City 0.
The cross from Yildiz is outrageous because he gets it out of his feet so quickly, then it's perfectly flighted. Vlahovic can attack it, and Edison can't quite grasp it at the first attempt. It gets away from him, and he's trying to claw it off the line, but it's too late.
Haaland's in front of him, slips it forward to Grealish, shooting chance. Grealish beats one man, lays it on for Bernardo Silva, whose shot is blocked by Danilo. De Bruyne to Bernardo Silva, back to Gundogan on the edge. Bernardo again, Gundogan again. What a lovely little move. Weah with a ball in, Lewis blocks it. Weah again, McKennie in space, fires home! It's a second goal for Juventus from Weston McKennie.
McKennie's kept on his run towards the penalty spot, and then he gets a nice early view of it, and it is a perfect stretch. He's almost horizontal when he makes connection with the ball. Perfect cross by Weah, but he's still got a lot to do, Weston McKennie. That is a sensational goal by Juventus.
Juventus run out 2-0 winners then against Man City. And Kevin Hatchard, as we watch back, the goals flying in, the reaction of the fans in the stadium in Juventus, you really realise how crucial those individual moments were in a game that was a lot like a chess match at times.
Yeah, and I think Juventus deserve massive credit for this, because Richard was absolutely right in commentary. They've taken on one of the best teams in the world. They've taken on a team that has won this competition fairly recently, and in that season did a treble. So, you know, this is a squad full of world-class talent. What I loved was the composure, because when they played out from the back, when they were under pressure, they never panicked. They played out in lots of different ways, either keeping the ball on the floor or playing a switch, lots of different ways of doing it. Defensively, they did the hard work when they had to. Locatelli, Thuram, outstanding in those holding defensive midfield positions in front of the back four. Thought to a man, the back four superb. And when the goalkeeper had to perform, Di Gregorio made an outstanding save from Haaland with the score at 0-0 in the first half. And then further forwards, Yildiz makes the first goal with a sumptuous cross. Vlahovic scores that first goal. I just thought, to a man, they were outstanding. It was a really top performance.
How big does that save from Di Gregorio look now, Richard?
Yeah, I mean, it felt big at the time. It looks even bigger at the end of the game. I mean, that was one moment where Juventus were completely undone, where De Bruyne did manage to get the ball between Juve lines, where they weren't tightly together, where there was space between them, and the Belgian exploited it, played the ball one side of the defender, Haaland ran the other. There he is, one-on-one with the goalkeeper, fairly central position, time to play the finish, and we all know what happens next, don't we? He lifts the ball with his left foot over the goalkeeper, and it drops perfectly and rolls over the goal line, except Di Gregorio maybe had done his research and managed that tremendous double act of being able to keep his body quite broad while at the same time making himself tall as well by throwing up the arm over the top, makes the save. It's celebrated by Juve, of course it is, and City do not get, in the remaining 55 minutes of play, do not get another chance as good as that, do not get as clear an opportunity. At 1-0 down with City on top in the scoreline, it would have been a totally different game. Hard to predict how it would have unfolded, but City are a team that needs confidence right now. Although it sounds, it's definitely true. They've won just one now of their last 10 matches in all competitions. And moments like that, they need something to turn the tide.
That's absolutely it. Because confidence, I think, sometimes translates into intensity. And it translates into moments where you're just a step slow when you press, or when there's a ball that comes loose, you don't know whether it's your ball or somebody else's. If you look at the build-up to the first goal, the ball spins loose on the edge of the area. Kyle Walker, normally a confident Kyle Walker, would just race after it and deal with it, but there's just that half second, do I go or not? It's too late by then, because Yildiz is onto it, onto his right foot, perfect cross to the far post. These are still top class players. But like anyone, and this doesn't happen to City very often, if at all, suddenly there's a run of games where it hasn't gone their way, and it's like, how do we deal with this? So I thought it was a mix of City being good, but not quite where they need to be, and Juventus being outstanding.
If I may offer up another one, Kevin, a ball rolling to Kevin De Bruyne about 18 metres out. You're just waiting for him to put the laces through it. And you can just see there's a second extra there, and he ends up squaring the ball. And City, for large parts this evening, ended up being a little slow on the edge of the box.
But again, this comes from the circumstances they're in the sense that they've had injuries. And so if you've got a player like De Bruyne, who is, I mean, as good a midfielder as there's been in the last few years in world football, I would say, in terms of the creativity, the consistency, the quality, but he hasn't played a lot because he's been injured. And then you come back in and then you're trying to hit that high level again. And if it's not quite working out for you, those automatisms, as the Germans would say, they're not quite there. That kind of automatic thing that you would normally do without even thinking isn't quite there for you. When that's happening all around, then it's difficult. But what I don't want to get away from is just how well Juve played, because you've got to remember they've had injuries too. No Bremer, no Cabal. Douglas Luiz has only just come back. They've had a few players who've been in and out. Cambiaso, the latest one out. And yet, they look like a unit that have played together forever. And actually, Thiago Motta's only been there a matter of months. He got Bologna into the Champions League. Then he's come to Juventus. He's made them look like his team so quickly.
Quite simply, this is his best night so far as Juve coach.
Yeah.
Juventus now sit 14th in the table on 11 points. The elimination places begin at 25th. Paris in 25th with 7 points. Just a little bit of breathing room there, Richard. Two games to go. One win would be enough to ensure that Juventus are going to be in the conversation for the playoff places. And if they get it right, two big wins, potentially they see themselves go up into the top eight.
Yeah, they go away to Club Brugge on match day 7 on January the 21st. At home to Benfica is their last match. You know, they'd be hoping that 3 points in Belgium would be enough to get them over the line and that their place in the top 24 would be assured going into match day out eight, and maybe give them a tiny sniff possibly of looking up the league further than that. I mean, I think for Juventus now, I'd be 100% sure that they'll be, you know, in the knockout phase,
yeah,
in
I'd
the
agree.
Playoff round. I mean, they're just too good not to be. City, I think, are probably going to be there as well. They just need to get themselves into the top 24 somehow, and things might work out for them. They're not a team that I would rule out from winning the competition still.
Absolutely.
But they've just got to get themselves out of this first phase somehow, by hook or by crook now.
So here's the fascinating thing, right? If they get through, nobody's going to want to face them, because they'll have players back. They might go on a run of... City are one of the few teams in Europe that you would say, oh, they could win 20 in a row, 20 games in a row, and that they've done it. So you can never, ever rule them out. It's a really tricky time for them, trickiest since Guardiola took over, no doubt about that. But they have enough experience and quality to find a way, and I don't doubt that in January they will look to change things to some extent in the transfer market. Just on Juve, I think they will go through. I think Rich is absolutely right. They will go through. Nobody's going to want to face them, because they're the type of team, if they carry on this path, get some players back, they'll learn more about what Motta wants. I think they'll be better in an attacking sense. But they look like a knockout team to me, because they're not going to give much away. Got a great competition for the goalkeeping position. Defensively, they're strong. Midfield, they're strong. You're not going to want to take them on over two legs.
Might still make top eight. It's not impossible.
Yeah, it could do.
It's not impossible.
Could do.
This is going to be another one of the fascinating quirks of the league phase this year, as we'll see teams, huge European sides in the unseeded playoff places against sides that may possibly have performed better, that will be thinking, oh, have we got ourselves a tie against a favourable opponent, perhaps at least on paper. But all remains to be played for in the two final match days. Let's go elsewhere to Dortmund. They lost by 3-2 against Barcelona. And Kev, what a game this was. We billed it at the top of the day as one of those games where we're expecting goals, goals, goals. All of them came in the second half. And it was back and forth. Ultimately, Ferran Torres making the difference tonight.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he quite likes playing German sides. He once got a hat-trick for Spain, I seem to remember, in a 6-0 win against Germany. So I think he's a player that gets overlooked a bit sometimes. We talk about Lamine Yamal, we talk about Lewandowski, talk about Rafinha, but he's always there, whether it's as a sub, whether it's as a starter, he's always affecting the game, scores goals, makes goals, very good finisher. I've always really liked him as a finisher, and I think that's a super win for Barcelona. It's another sign of what they can do in this tournament. I still think defensively, he's not going to change Hansi Flick, he's not going to change that high defensive line. But the way they play is to say, OK, we are what we are. We might concede two, but we'll score three. And that's exactly what they've done.
Yamal, player of the match tonight. And it was his assist,
yeah,
that got the goal to get Barcelona over the line and get that 3-2 win. But the thing that will be frustrating for Dortmund is that it comes from a Dortmund attack. They're in control in terms of territory. They're in control in terms of possession. And like lightning, Barcelona break down the other end. And this is what they can do with the forward line that they have.
Yeah, and it's a real problem for Dortmund at the moment, because they've got players out injured in defensive positions. Nicolas Zula picked up an ankle injury. The same ankle he's only just come back from having had injured before. So that's a real shame for him. Valdemar Anton picked up an injury recently against Bayern. So they are not quite down to bare bones at centre-back, but they're struggling in that area. And I still don't think they've quite got the balance right in midfield as well. They're thrilling when they get forward. And I think that speaks to this duality they have at the moment, where they're winning games at home, even though that's their first competitive home defeat under Nuri Sahin tonight. But away from home, they're struggling. And I think they're still a little too easy to play against. But when they get forward, as they've shown again in this game, they'll score goals against anybody.
Let's go over to North London. Arsenal run out 3-0 winners against Monaco. And Richard, once again, Bukayo Saka, incredibly impressive. 2 goals for him and an assist. He's one of those players that is an absolute joy to watch at the moment.
Yeah, he's that excellent combination, really, of a player who has that verve and that joy, as you say, but is also becoming a significant leader within the Arsenal group as well. Somebody who is so respected and so liked that leadership role has kind of almost come upon him naturally. But there's no doubting his skill. He's making contributions week in, week out. He's got a wand of a left foot. And he's well used to the big occasion now. Arsenal are sort of, you know, getting used to again to the Champions League environment after a little gap away from the competition. But he's somebody who is certainly at home at this level and somebody who could take them a long way.
I think he's one of the best wingers in the world. I genuinely do. I think he's in that top bracket now because you look at his Premier League record. He's been scoring goals and making goals consistently for years. He's still very, very young. He's got that dynamism, he's got that intelligence. Rich is absolutely right about his leadership. I think he's a young man who just has steel running through him. I mean, you think of some of the setbacks he's had in his career, that European Championship final at home for England against Italy, didn't go his way from the penalty spot. How'd you come back from that as a youngster? Well, he's shown how you do it.
Well, let's hear from player of the match, Bukayo Saka, now alongside young debutant Miles Lewis-Skelly.
I just said to him, like I said to him before the game, that this is his level. He needs to have no doubts and play with the confidence. What he's doing, we see it in training. So, yeah, I was pleased with him and he was a big part of the first goal.
Yeah, I'm proud of myself, you know. I believe in myself, but I've come a long way and I just want to thank everyone for giving me the opportunity and hopefully it's the first of many and I push on from here.
That is a lovely, lovely little interview there, Richard. And yeah. You spoke about him being a leader. You can almost hear it in Lewis, the way that Lewis-Skelly speaks. He's sort of almost imitating someone that he's looking up to.
Yeah, it's the sort of the big brother as leader, isn't it, really? It's not, you know, verbally having a go at somebody when they've not performed to the right level. It's not barking orders around. It's leadership by personality and by example. And that's got a tremendous value. And you can hear the mutual warmth, can't you? You can hear in that clip, it says it all.
They like him a lot, Miles Lewis-Skelly. They've used him in a fullback role at times, but he is a midfielder by trade. He's come through the youth ranks as a midfielder. And you see that more and more now. Players who play at fullback, you have that quality in possession. Old man Bukayo Saka at what? early 20s.
24?
It's amazing. Yeah.
Gosh,
it's
horrendous,
amazing.
Isn't it? And let's go on to San Siro. Milan winning 2-1 against Savona Spezia. Now, if you are ever wondering, for those of you who play any amateur football, what the difference is between the everyman and those doing it at the very highest level, Kev, just watch Rafa Leão's first touch for his first goal against Savona Spezia. What an unbelievable bit of control that was.
I wouldn't even have reached it. I'd have been left in a heap.
Pulled a hamstring just looking at
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Leg would have snapped in half. Yeah, and that's what he's capable of. And I think the big debate about him has always been, when he does things like this, when he brings a ball out of the sky and then finishes it brilliantly, it's can he do that on a more regular basis? And that's going to be the challenge for him going forward. But that's why he gets in the team, because he can do it. And he does it in big games, especially, you know, he doesn't score lots of goals in the Champions League, but he scores important ones. And this was a really important one. They actually nearly got held because Ivan Gutesa, the goalkeeper for Savona Spezia, did a brilliant job, and then they were able to get the equaliser through Radonjic, who's in red-hot form right now. He was superb against Stuttgart in that 5-1 win in the last match day. And then Tammy Abraham shows that poacher's instinct to put one in right at the end. So really huge result for Milan. I think they really needed it. They were beaten at Atalanta at the weekend and well beaten in that game. That's a super result for them.
Tammy Abraham coming off the bench and making a real impact there. Reacting first and suddenly that has such a totally different complexion, because to have dropped points there at home would have been a really tough evening for Milan.
Yeah, and we've talked about Juventus and Thiago Motta. It's the same with Paulo Fonseca. They don't play the same type of football necessarily, but he's come in from Lille. It hasn't quite worked for him in Italy before. He had a good spell at Roma, but maybe not as good as it could have been. And so he's trying to win people over and he's trying to say, look, this football can work. We can score goals. We can play attractive football, but you have to have the results to go with it. And I think given how they started in the Champions League this season with that home defeat against Liverpool, they've actually recovered really well. And they had that win at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid. And they've got some genuine momentum now.
Let's go on to Benfica against Bologna. It was goalless there. Now, Bruno Lage no doubt would have been hoping to come up with all three points tonight and move Benfica just a little bit further up the table. But at the same time, Benfica still in a good position on 10 points in the seeded playoff places in 15th. Two games to go. They're in an OK spot.
Yeah, they are. I think given the form they're in, they've won 8 of the last 9. And Bruno Lage, since he returned, has done really well. They'll look at that and think they should have won the game. Bologna have found the step up really difficult. And so I think Benfica might look at this as 2 drop points.
Benfica also have to play Barcelona at home on match day 7 and then go away to Juventus on match day 8. So, I mean, this is one of the other intriguing things. Everyone's got different fixtures and they've still got 2 tough ones to come.
The looks on faces suggested to me they felt that it was an opportunity missed.
Let's go on to 2 high-scoring games to finish up then. Feyenoord 4-2 winners against Sparta Praha and some wonderful goals in this. And Stuttgart 5-1 winners against Young Boys. Let's just talk a little bit about that Feyenoord win. You were both pointing out earlier on Hajj Musa, a player to watch, and what a wonderful goal from him tonight.
It was a terrific goal. And we spoke off-air about him, about what a joy he is to watch. And it's the way that he squares up the defender and just floats this curling effort in off the far post. But they'd also scored, you know, from close range through Trauner. Paixão's in good form in this competition and in the Eredivisie. You know, great finish from him into the far corner. They can do that, Rich, can't they?
They can. They haven't been. They've been missing chances. They've been getting on top of teams domestically and not putting them away. That's been a bit of a theme. They've dropped more points in the Eredivisie than they would have liked. They felt like they've been playing better than the results have really reflected, yeah. And they've fallen really too far behind PSV domestically as a result. But they have got reasons to be cheerful. Jimenez is coming back from a couple of months out injured.
Scored again.
Yeah, he's played so much football over sort of a period of about 18 months that an injury came along almost inevitably. But he's had a period away. He's coming back to fitness. He started tonight again. He's got a goal again. If they get him back to anywhere like the form he was in 2023, they'll have an enormous asset. And Hajj Musa has come from the Belgian third division to the Champions League within about 18 months and is looking to me like the biggest snip of the year at 1.8 million euros. I mean, the guy is worth the admission price on his own. He can go both ways. He's got tricks that will leave you smiling and laughing, and they're effective as well, and there's end product. The goal tonight was his 6th in 7 games.
A wonderful journey and a beautiful goal this evening. Let's go on to Stuttgart against Young Boys then. 5-1 win for Stuttgart. And that does mean that Young Boys, unfortunately, won't be able to qualify for the playoffs, Kev. And I think one of the things that we're seeing from this league phase is it is so crucial to have a strong start so you don't leave yourself in a position with everything to do with just 3 match nights to go.
Yeah, I think with Young Boys, you have to look at their season globally and how much they've struggled in the Swiss Super League. They've changed their coach. Joel Magnan's come in and tried to steady the ship. So I think it's understandable they found this hard. This, for me, I mean, this sounds like hyperbole, but I genuinely think this was actually one of the biggest nights in Stuttgart's recent history. You're talking about an iconic German club that has actually been relegated twice in the 21st century in German football, and yet they've come back, they're in the Champions League, they needed to win this game. Sebastian Hoeneß knew it, the fans knew it, the players knew it, and they actually produced the kind of football that got them here in the first place.
Still to come on the podcast, we'll look back at the rest of tonight's action and look ahead to match day 7. There were 2 early kickoffs this evening. In Madrid, Atletico hosted Slovan Bratislava, whilst in France, Sturm Graz travelled to Lille. Here's the best of the action.
Fenders backpedalling and the shot goes in. Sarawi celebrates. Lille have the breakthrough and it'll come out as far as Bakka. It's 2. Across, not cleared properly by Bouadi, and Kitaishvili thumps it into the roof of the net. Well, as everybody was looking at their watch, expecting the referee to blow for half-time, Sturm Graz get themselves on the score sheet.
Stake there by Bouadi, who's lost possession. Kitaishvili feeding it back to Boerving. Mika waits in the middle, and there he is, it's 2-2.
Nando Pardo, David, looking right, Haraldsson. Oh, what an impact! Hakon Haraldsson has only been on the pitch for a minute, but he's thumped Lille back in front.
Alvarez!
is beautiful. He's paying back the huge transfer fee with a dividend of goals. His 12th of the season. Great run on the blind side from Llorente. Griezmann! He makes it look so simple. Penalty given. Well, an unexpected invitation to inch their way back into the game. Gladly taken. David Strelic, who had been fouled, whips in the penalty. 2-1. Game on. Koke shoots the demand, passes to Griezmann, and Griezmann squeezes it in. A double for Antoine Griezmann.
So it finished Lille 3, Sturm Graz 2. Let's hear from the scorer of Lille's late match-winning goal, the young winger, Hakon Arne Haraldsson.
I like to have intensity in my game and good goal from me. I'm very happy, so yeah, good game from me. Yeah, of course, we have to try. We are there. We are already through with the playoff, but of course we want to be in top eight. It's difficult. We have Liverpool in Anfield. It's a really difficult game, but of course we have to try.
Our reporter in France for that match was Alicia Saliou, and I caught up with her a little earlier and started by asking whether the home side made hard work of the win.
Exactly. They came back from a 2-0 deficit. I don't think anyone expected that. And then even beginning and the middle of the second half, they were able to put their foot next to Lille, who we can't ignore as a team that has been performing so well this season. So it was quite surprising and very entertaining to see.
Did you feel the atmosphere shift in the stadium at Toul? Did it feel like the game was on a knife edge?
Yes, it definitely did feel that way. You could also feel the tension. The fans started to back their team more when they were in possession. So you could definitely feel, yeah, it was an electric atmosphere in the stadium, definitely.
And a massive win for Lille now. They move up towards the automatic playoff positions. How much do you think that meets the expectations around the club? Were they hoping for an automatic playoff place?
Well, they were trying to keep their feet on the ground. That's what the Mamounier told me. But now that they've gotten these 3 points, 3 golden points, they're starting to, you know, let themselves dream of it. They've made it their new target. They don't want to go for anything less anymore. They also said that with the new format, they should aim high. You can see that other big teams, big names are now down in the ranking. So they said anything with this new competition format is possible, and they're really aiming high. So they really do want to qualify and be at the first eight.
UEFA reporter Alicia Saliou there. Elsewhere, Atletico won 3-1 against Slovan Bratislava. And Kev, we need to talk about Julian Alvarez and Antoine Griezmann. Another wonderful performance from both of them. Griezmann, who was player of the match. They have the ability, this Atletico side, to take the game to another opposition. It's not just a case of sitting in and being difficult to break down. They have the tools and they have the weapons to get at teams.
Yeah, that's the evolution of the team. And Alvarez, after a slow start, has really taken off. You'd expect that. He's a World Cup winner. He's a guy who's, you know, won so much already. And he wanted to be the main man, and he's starting to be that. Griezmann has been consistent all the way through. Scored the winner at the weekend as they came back from 3-1 down to beat Sevilla 4-3. It's the first time since the 1950s they've scored 3 goals or more in 5 straight games. Atleti are on fire right now.
Let's just go through the league phase table then at the end of match day 6. So in 36th, Young Boys, Slovan Bratislava just ahead in 35th, and RB Leipzig in 34th. Those three sides now with no chance of making it through to the playoff places. The next set of teams that will be looking in match day 7 and match day 8 to try and force their way into the playoffs. Bologna in 33rd with 2 points. Salzburg 32nd. 31st is Savenas Fezda. Girona are on 3 points in 30th, 29th Sturm Graz, 28th Sparta Praha, and then Shakhtar just slightly ahead in 27th on 7 points. In 26th is Stuttgart, and then on 25th, also on 7 points, is Paris. We now go into the unseeded places, so from 24th to 17th, and that's GNK Dinamo, PSV in 23rd, Man City, who lost to Juventus 2-0 in 22nd, Celtic are are in 21st. They're a point ahead of Man City on 9 points. Real Madrid also on 9 points. They're in 20th. Brugge are 19th. Feyenoord 18th. And Sporting are 17th with 10 points. Then into the seeded places. That's from 16th to 9th. Monaco 16th. Benfica 15th. Juventus up into 14th after that win against Man City. Atalanta 13th. Milan's win means that they go to 12th. They're on 12 points. The same as Atletico, who are 11th. The same as Bayern München, who are 10th. And Dortmund, who are 9th. And then the top 8 spots that will skip the playoff round and go straight into the round of 16. Lille in 8th. Brest in 7th. Inter are 6th. Aston Villa in 5th. Leverkusen 4th. Arsenal's win tonight means that they go to 3rd. Barcelona are in 2nd after their win against Dortmund. And Liverpool lead the way on 18 points and have been flawless so far. Which means when we look ahead to match day 7 in a month's time, with the league phase's penultimate round, some crucial ties. On Tuesday, Liverpool against Lille, Atleti against Leverkusen and Benfica against Barcelona. On Wednesday, Paris against Man City, Real Madrid against Salzburg, Feyenoord versus Bayern. Kevin, that Wednesday night looks very tasty indeed.
Yeah, I think this Paris-Manchester City game is enormous. I mean, they've been combatants in this tournament, deep in the tournament on several occasions in the last few years. There is enormous pressure on both of them now. We've seen Paris win against Salzburg on Tuesday night, but they've been missing chances in games pretty routinely, so it's been tough for them. I also quite like the look of Atletico against Leverkusen on Tuesday. I really like the look of Liverpool-Lille, actually, because I'd be interested to see what Lille can do. They've beaten Atletico Madrid, they've beaten Real Madrid. Why wouldn't they fancy a crack against Liverpool at Anfield? So I think there are some terrific games everywhere you look. And I think when we get to match day 8, there are going to be high-pressure games time and time again. And it just shows you how well the new format's working.
3 points separate third-placed Arsenal from 19th-place Club Brugge. And obviously a quite a large spectrum of goal difference as well, but really there's an enormous sweep of teams within that tiny margin. There's an awful lot that's going to change over the next 2 match days.
Plenty to play for with those 2 match days to go, and we'll bring you all the action right here on Match Day Live on Match Day 7. That's on Tuesday the 21st and Wednesday the 22nd of January. We're on air from 8:45 PM CET both evenings, so look out for that. Back to our featured commentary this evening, where Manchester City went down 2-0 in Turin to Juventus. City manager Pep Guardiola is trying to remain upbeat despite their difficult position in the table.
I think it's tough when you prove it, and you know, except one or two games in this period that was not good, the rest we play quite similar. I give credit to Juventus, congratulations for the way they defend, for the transitions they did it, but we were incredible aggressive in our high pressing. We won the long balls, the back four was really, really good. Of course it's a cross and Vlahovic is strong in that position, but the way we played, I'm really pleased.
Pep Guardiola staying positive there. Since the start of November, though, Man City have conceded more goals across all competitions than any other team from Europe's Big Five leagues. 21 in 9 games. Just before we finish up, gents, let's do our moment of the evening. Richard, what are you going to go for?
Well, I'm going to go for Weston McKennie's second goal for Juventus, because I think that was kind of a coming out moment for this team. If they build on that, if they take encouragement from what they've achieved tonight, then this season a lot of things are going to prove themselves possible for that team.
Kev?
I'm going to go for Anis Hajmus's curler for Feyenoord, because it was just brilliant.
I was going to go for that. I'm going to be really dull and agree with you, because I just think it's such a wonderful goal. It's a beautiful finish.
You have that. I'll have Ferran Torres' winner.
Fair enough.
Barcelona
big moment.
Against Borussia
Very
Dortmund.
Big moment. Just some outstanding goals tonight. It was a wonderful watch. Thanks so much to Kevin Hatchard and to Richard Connolly. Absolute pleasure to share this one with you. And a reminder that this very podcast will be available at the end of every match night of the Champions League. So make sure wherever you get your podcasts from, you do subscribe, you follow and you download. We'll be back next year. Bit of a winter break now, but match day 7 is on the horizon. So make sure that you join us Tuesday the 21st and Wednesday the 22nd of January from 8:45 p.m. Central European time for the penultimate round of the league phase. It's all up for grabs, but for now, from me, Ben Haynes, and the rest of the Matchday Live team, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the official UEFA Champions League podcast.